They followed behind Doc, Mildred and Jack exchanging puzzled glances. No one else spoke. They merely followed the old man as he trailed along the maze of corridors, his demeanor showing a definite intent. He passed numerous closed doors and moved up a level, until coming to a specific closed door. The companions held back, letting Doc enter the room on his own. They could hear the sound of lockers being opened, the rustling of clothes, and then silence. Christy moved forward silently, looking into the room. Doc was on his knees in front of a line of open lockers, among a pile of clothes. There were jackets, short skirts, and buckskin boots. He took a yellow silk blouse and held it up to his nose, inhaling deeply, before looking at Christy with an almost infinite sadness.
They don't even smell of her. They don't smell of anything at all. It's as though she never existed.
It had been a while. So much had happened to them since then. Finnegan and Hennings were gone. So were Oki and Hunniker. Doc had been even more of an enigma then. Mildred had still been frozen, and Jack was still in the bayou. The corpses of Keeper Quint and his sister-wife Rachel were here somewhere, wherever they had dumped them after the firefight that had chilled them. Hunniker, too. And the young woman named Lori was also lost to them. Quint's daughter, maybe Rachel's, maybe another chilled wife's, they'd never been able to work that one out, who had chosen the companions over the insanity of her inbred family existence and had become Doc's companion. The clean slate of her untutored mind provided a sounding board for the time traveler's tortured psyche until she had been cruelly snatched away from him. The redoubt had continued to function without anyone to trouble its automated systems. Left to the efficiency of the old tech, it had continued to light and heat the underground warren and to maintain a level of operable capability. It hadn't changed since they had left it, which should have given them cause for celebration. The showers and baths still worked, the water was still hot. There were still plentiful supplies, and the armory was as it had been left after they had plundered it last time. Even having taken all that they could carry, there was still far more that had been left behind. The size of the armory, indeed the size of the redoubt as a whole, had been dictated by its proximity to the old Soviet Union, and even though that threat had long since been erased, the detritus of an ancient conflict still marked its passing. The store's glittering mosaic floor still beckoned with operating old tech, clothes, vids, and tapes of old shows and music, the likes of which Mildred hadn't seen since her pre-dark life. It should have been a chance for them to rest up, knowing that they were alone and that there was little to disturb them beyond the sectors to the outside world. They could relax and recuperate. But it wasn't going to work that way. In the armory, the twisted skeleton they had encountered on their last visit was now dust, disturbed from its years of rest. The warning scrawled in blood on the door now faded. They were soon reminded that the majority of the weaponry and ammo left in the armory was of little use to them. The blasters were too big or clumsy, or not makes and models in which any of them were proficient or comfortable. The ammo for the weapons they used was either cleaned out or not there in the first place, the only ordnance left suitable for the blasters they had dismissed. Beyond the armory, there was enough old tech and cultural artifacts to keep them occupied for years. Except that Jack wasn't interested, Mildred found them reminders of her past that she would prefer to keep buried, and for the others, they were reminders only of the previous visit and the disasters that had ensued. Mildred, tired of being reminded of the world before the new cost, asked what had happened. She listened while they told her and Jack of their previous visit to this redoubt and their encounter with the Keeper. How he had been desperate for new blood to provide for another Keeper to succeed him, and how he and his sister-wife Rachel had wanted to keep the companions there. About how when they had then left the redoubt, they had encountered the Russian bandits who had made their way across the wastelands separating the old United States from the old USSR in the snow-filled lands that had once been Alaska. Jack nodded recognition when they spoke of the Russian Major Zimyanin, who had led the Russian SEC in pursuit of the bandits. The name was familiar to him from the time when the Matrans had sent them to the old capital of the USSR, Moscow, and they had once more encountered the granite-faced SEC man. But even though he may have expected to have heard all about their previous encounter, he was astonished when the facts unfolded. The fact that they had broken a dam with an old missile and flooded part of the land in escaping from Zinyanin's arbitrary justice was something that had been unknown to him. Ryan's description of the expression on the Russian's face when the dam broke made Jack laugh, a short, loud bark that broke the silence. He laughed even harder when he heard how the man had been duped by another missile, this one a dummy. It should have broken the tension, but it didn't. They were all still uneasy. There was little in the way of useful food supplies left from their previous stopover, so they would have to move soon anyway, jump to another location, or walk out into a hostile and frozen environment that had been changed by the dam burst. If they jumped, it was possible that the new redoubt and its environs would be just as hostile. As Ryan had once read in a pre-dark book, Better the Devil You Knew, they'd attempt to find more supplies in the frozen wasteland before attempting a jump. Ryan and Christy settled into the whirlpool bath that was still working perfectly.
Reckon we should move as soon as possible. Could make the food last a few days, but...
Christy shook her head, the long red tresses flowing freely over her shoulders. Despite the air of unease about the redoubt, there was no danger, and so her sentient hair remained relaxed.
It's going to be hard out there, real hard. I remember what it was like from before, but it's got to be better than in here. It's like there are ghosts watching us, coming down and pressing us into the ground.
Shouldn't be that way. We've chilled our share. Had to before they chilled us. Quint and Rachel were just another two. No reason they should come back. Not something stoop like ghosts, but the memory.
Christy reached out and stroked his face, tracing the line of his scar down to his jaw.
It isn't them. It's Hunniker. It's Lori. It's being back where so much really started. And it's being able to relax for once. We know what's out there, more or less, and we know what's in here. There's nothing to keep on edge about. And when you do that, that's when the ghosts start to creep back and you have the time to think about all the things that you don't really want to think about.
So maybe the sooner we get on the move, the sooner we have things to deal with, and the sooner this feeling will go.
You got that, lover.
She pulled him toward her.
But while we are here, do you remember what we did the last time we used this path?
Her hands probed beneath the surface of the water, reaching for him.
Oh, yeah. I reckon you do.
Right.
Ryan moved in close, his hands reaching down under the water for her.
Oh?
It wasn't just sex. It was making love. Connecting in a way that they hadn't been able to for far too long. They had the space now, the privacy, and the time. What was more, the intensity drove away the demons, banishing them away where they could no longer disturb or intrude. It was only afterward, when they had finished and had left the bath, that Ryan wandered into the gym that led off the bathroom. While the bath drained noisily and Christy dried herself off, there was some memory that had come back to Ryan and was bugging him. It was only when he looked over at the closed door and expected to see a length of green ribbon that he remembered. Quint had watched them when they were here before, and had left the ribbon by accident. He wore it in his long, tangled beard. Christy had found the length that time, and now Ryan had expected to see it once again, even though he knew that was impossible. He was still standing naked, staring at the door, when she came out to him. Following the line of his gaze, she knew what he was seeing in his mind's eye.
Do you think Doc's right?
About what, lover?
What he was saying in the chamber about us repeating ourselves time and time again. Back here, waiting for it to start over, just like last time.
But it's not the same, is it? There's no Quint, no Zemyanin, and the landscape outside is different after the dam broke. We've got Jack and Mildred, so it's different. But there are some things that are the same, that are always the same. There's always some bastard who wants to stand in our way or pick a fight with us. So we fight. Either that or let them chill us. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to buy the farm yet.
True enough.
Ryan put his arm around her and pulled her close so that he could feel her warmth, reassure himself that she was real, even if his fears weren't.
But don't you remember that one time we wanted to head to where traders said there was a place we could settle and build a life without having to fight?
Yeah, and look how much we had to fight when we were looking. No more or less than we have to fight now. Maybe it doesn't even exist. Maybe it's like that place Mildred told us about once that was in an old book. Erewhon. Even heard of that myself back in Harmony. Supposed to be where everything was perfect.
So where was it?
Christy fixed him with a stare.
Know what you get if you take the letters in Erewhon and put them in a reverse order? Nowhere, Ryan. And maybe that's what Trader's Place is. Just somewhere in your head that you can try and make.
But the disk. If we could ever have cracked that comm code, then...
Then maybe it was only the plans for some so-called perfect place. Like all the ideas that those stoops who started the New Cost ever had. Plans, not a real place. And if it was a real place, maybe it was standing then, but not now.
So there was no point in searching?
Depends what for. If it's for something solid and tangible, then maybe not. But if it was for somewhere we could settle and make that place ourselves, then maybe.
Then every time we land somewhere, there's always a chance.
It should have been an opportunity for them to get some valuable sleep before they stepped out into the frozen wastes, but no one was in any mood to sleep easily in the redoubt that night. The sense of unease that had permeated the air like a poison gas got into their dreams, making them wake from nightmares. Some never got as far as the nightmares. Doc stayed awake all night, staring at the ceiling, trying to will himself into sleep, but failing as the images tumbled around his head. Lori became mixed with Emily, Rachel, and Joyon. His love in the new century entangled with those of 200 years before. All lost to him now, like everything. Like his very sanity. Even if only from the things he had witnessed since being shot forward into a post-New Cost world. Let alone the horrors of being dragged from his own time, subjected to white coat experiments, then discarded like a broken doll. By the time morning came, and most had groggily awakened from their disturbed slumbers, Doc was no longer sure if any of this was real. Was he really here, or was he still in a cell, taunted and tortured for the benefit of a twisted science? Even worse, was he still back in the 19th century, in a padded cell, raving and delusional, while his beloved Emily wept for him? For if he were truly mad, how would he know? The set code on the main door was still the same. They stood at the entrance, waiting for the door to grind into motion and open. The elements had taken their toll on both the door and its mechanism. Slowly, it revealed the world beyond, from the first crack letting in the cold and driving winds, forcing back the constant warm air that had cosseted them since their arrival. All were equipped for this. The food stores may have been low and next to useless, and the armory of little practical help following their previous incursion, but the mall-like storeroom still had treasures to give forth. They had arrived with clothes that had adequately seen them through warmer climes, but were ill-suited to the conditions that they knew they were about to enter. Along the walls of the storerooms, and off in the walk-in compartments that littered the jeweled mosaic floor, they had found boxes and racks of furs and man-made fibers that insulated against the cold. One thing was for sure, the personnel who would have populated the redoubt in the days before the New Cost were prepared for the weather. Christy and Jack had both chosen rabbit and fox furs, the pelts sewn together to form a muted pattern that would blend into a landscape less harsh than the one they were about to encounter. Out there, they would show up against the rock and snow. But camouflage wasn't a primary concern, especially as the artificial fibers chosen by Mildred and JB were of brighter colors, orange and blue. These were designed specifically to stand out on the landscape, to make their wearers easy to track. That was irrelevant. What mattered was that both these three-quarter-length padded and insulated coats had a number of pockets, many of which had a depth of more than 6 inches, strewed about their person. Without such capacious storage, both would have had to keep their supplies swaddled in their usual clothing, tight beneath the outer layer, and difficult to reach in times of emergency. It was impossible to carry all their supplies in their satchels. Ryan had taken a full-length coat in artificial fiber, a Velcro fastening enabling it to be pulled open quickly. He still had his panga strapped to his thigh, and wanted to be sure he could reach it with ease and speed. For this very reason, he, like the others, had eschewed the possibility of a full body covering. In one of these, they would be completely insulated against the temperature drop, yet it would also make them slow and clumsy, their weapons having to be relocated on their bodies, leaving them unable to reach by instinct and in a fraction of a second their favored tools of slaughter. The moments spent fumbling in new places, remembering where they had relocated their weapons, would be minimal, yet could make the difference between chill or be chilled. Ryan secured his scarf with its weighted ends around his neck. Doc, who stood to the rear of the line, was in black. It suited his mood. He had taken a full-length fur that swamped his angular frame, bulking him out so that he was almost unrecognizable. As the door finally ground to a halt, the winds from outside swirled around and welcomed them in a cold embrace. The taint of sulfur in the air caught at their throats and made them choke and cough before they became used to breathing it in. Although it wasn't snowing, the air was still full of small flakes and particles of ice that had been chipped away from the surrounding terrain by the strength of the winds. These stung on their exposed skin.
Let's move it, people.
All were still wrapped in their own thoughts, having barely communicated that morning.